Thank you for listening to the podcast of The Exchange with Ed Stetzer. The Exchange is a weekly production of Lifeway Christian Resources in cooperation with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media. More information about and past editions of The Exchange audio podcast can be found at myfaithradio.com. Under Programs, select The Exchange. We hope you enjoy and are challenged by this week's podcast.
We're not a church. We come alongside churches. Pastors are our number one customer. And we're come alongside the pastor to help him fulfill a great commission. And so that's what helped us narrow our focus. One, we're not a church. We don't baptize people. We help come alongside churches to do that and to help them make disciples.
Hi, and welcome to The Exchange with Ed Stetzer. My name is Micah Fries, and we're glad you're here. Remember, The Exchange is a place where we like to engage in truth, thoughts, and theology to compel one another to love and good deeds. On today's show, Ed Stetzer is joined by Dr. Kevin Ezell. Now, Ezell most recently served as an interim pastor for Long Hollow Church in Hendersonville, Tennessee, formerly was the senior pastor of Highview Church in Louisville, Kentucky for 14 years, and currently is the president of the North American Mission Board based out of Atlanta, where he provides strategic vision, direction, and leadership as the North American Mission Board works to reach North America through evangelism and church planting. Now, as we get started today, remember, you can engage with us on social media. Just be sure to use the hashtag TheExchange so that we know that you're in the conversation. Before we jump into the interview, though, let's hear from Carolyn Takeda about spiritually growing your small group.
So in this stage, members know and love one another. They recognize their strengths and weaknesses of each person, and they accept them. The group is cohesive. There's mutual respect is high. The members are interdependent and becoming more so. It's a desire for personal spiritual growth and greater missional purpose is really what needs to be driving the group's relationships and activities in this stage. At this point, you want the group to start going beyond itself and reaching out to non-believers and showing God's love to those in need. And so members regularly now are engaging in spiritual disciplines. They're understanding the role of the group in their spiritual development and how God's using that group there. And the group is consistently looking for ways to encourage and hold each other accountable in their commitments towards change. So this should be a high fruitful stage. And to discover whether a group is healthy in this maturing stage, ask yourself these questions. One, are the members regularly spending time with God and engaging in personal spiritual disciplines? Whether it's reading the Word every day or chunks of time in God's Word or praying, just whatever helps them grow spiritually, are they doing that on their own? They're self-feeding, basically. Two, do members look for ways to serve and care for one another? So if someone is ill at the hospital, instead of looking to the leader to go visit and take care of them, do they then dive in and go visit and set up meals for the family and just do those caretaking things like a family would? You're seeing more of that kind of activity. Number three, do members hold each other accountable to their commitment toward change? And I'm talking something beyond just week one, they say, oh, I'm going to do X thing because I feel like God wants me to talk to my neighbor. So that means the following week that people in the group feel comfortable saying, hey, Joe, how did that go? Did you talk to your neighbor? And it's not weird or awkward, but that's the norm. The norm is that people say, I want to do this. I think God's calling me to this next step. And then the group rallies around, supports them, and then actually asks if that's happening. Four, are group times marked by anticipation of what God can do? Again, it's the power of God unleashed in people that brings fruit and that brings change. So we want to constantly create a sense of anticipation and an awareness of what God is doing and a desire for that. Five, are members growing in the fruit of the Spirit such that life change is apparent? A lot of times, when you look at are people really growing in groups, there's this, quantitative measure, how many people are in groups, are they attending regularly, all that kind of stuff. But there's this qualitative life change measure that's probably even much more important, and that has to do with, are you a different person? Are you more loving, kind, gentle, more self-controlled? Are you having the fruits of the Spirit that Galatians talks about? Is that more apparent in you and your members 6 months, 1 year, and you're just marking that and you're seeing change happen? It doesn't have to be radical. It might be radical, but that you're seeing those steps of change be apparent.
Kevin, thanks for joining us on The Exchange. So glad you're here.
Hey, I am too.
Good to be here.
Well, let's jump in. Let's talk about church planting, which is something you're passionate about.
Right.
The North American Mission Board, as an organization, right, has gone through substantive shift. I used to work there, and it was basically, it felt like a
one organization with 46 small businesses, everyone sort of doing different things.
Excellent description.
But now it seems to have a much clearer focus on church planning. Right. First, tell us organization. I know budget-wise you've made substantive changes, staff-wise. Right. Explain how you did some of those things and then why.
Right. The reason we wanted to become an agency that helped every church connect with their next missional opportunity. And in order to do church planning, we did so many things average or lower, we felt. And so we had to bring a sense of focus. And in doing that, we went from our budget being around 17% toward church planning to over 55% of our budget goes to church planning.
How many years did that take place?
It took us about 3.5 years.
But a shift of double, triple funding into church planning. Okay.
Yeah. Now, you know, we have well over $60 million that are going to church planning.
Amazing. Why would you think it would be necessary to do that? A lot of denominations I work with are sort of, they got a lot of constituencies they're trying to keep happy through their mission agencies.
Sure.
They've got a little bit over here, a little bit over here, a little bit over here.
Right.
You made a major shift. Why?
Right. One, I feel like as an agency, we understand we're not a church.
Yeah.
We come alongside churches. Pastors are our number one customer. And we're come alongside the pastor to help him fulfill the Great Commission. And NAM started trying to be a church and doing things that churches should do.
Yeah.
And hiring people to do things that really churches have been called to do. And so that's what helped us narrow our focus. One, we're not a church. We don't baptize people. We help come alongside churches to do that. And to help them make disciples. And I feel like in the New Testament, you make disciples, and those disciples, you group those, and they become churches. That's the very best way, not the only way, but the very best way, in my opinion, to reach not only North America, but the world.
Yeah, so church planting is become a big thing.
Right.
I met earlier today with the leaders of a conference called the Exponential Conference, and they reminded me I spoke at their first meeting.
Yeah.
And their first meeting a decade ago was a few hundred people.
Yeah.
Now, you just had a conference talking about church planting and mission, and you had 13,000. They have a conference.
Right.
They have 5,000, 6,000, two locations. It could be 10,000 total.
Right.
What happened, and why did people get so passionate and excited about church planting?
I really believe God's doing something incredible, and everything's aligning at the right time, where all these different streams are flowing together to make what I believe one very strong current in a river headed to where we need to go. I don't mean to dodge that, but anyway, it really is something I think God is supernaturally doing to bring this generation. I mean, when I talk to college students, that they don't have a desire for material things like my generation did coming up. I'd like to get a job to do this or that.
Yeah.
Their heart is much more missional minded,
right, sure.
but they're just willing to give up any and everything. My daughter is moving to Asia in a week with her husband. And
I saw that tweet talking about missions is different than sending your daughter on missions.
Oh, preaching about missions is much easier than hugging your daughter for the last time, sending her on a mission.
Oh, that was beautiful. As a father of three daughters, I was moved by that.
Listen, I was moved by it yesterday.
Yeah.
I only moved by it today. It hurts, but honestly, it's what it takes. Yeah. But they are passionate about it.
Yeah.
And in a way, it was so refreshing.
Yeah.
And I wish I were that passionate when I was that age.
Mm. So talk to me some about the way you pulled, led an organization to make such a substantive shift. Now, again, I say this because, I mean, I work there. So,
right.
So and we both say many great people doing important things.
Very good things.
But not a focused organization.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the reasons they hired you. And I was stunned. I as I sat back, because people had asked me what I thought about the agency. It's called the North American Mission Board. And I kind of, it's kind of like, I don't know what it does, et cetera, et cetera. And people said, could this be changed? And what you have done, I didn't think somebody could do.
Wow.
So what did you do? And this will help all of us in our churches and our ministries. What did you do to continuously pull, and maybe that's the wrong word, I don't know what pull, push, whatever, the lead the organization to shed substantive numbers of things,
right,
to engage in substantive numbers of new things. A lot of people, they don't want to do that. They want to keep doing everything, and you stopped.
There's just not, you can't. Yeah. I mean, there's so many pieces of the pie.
So how did you turn stuff off?
Well, we determined what our focus was going to be. Our focus was going to be church planting, and then there are certain things that fell outside of that focus. As you said, there are some very good people.
Good people love
very
Jesus.
Very gifted people.
Yeah.
sweet people.
Yeah.
That's the hardest part.
Yeah.
I wish they were all mean. It would have been easier.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and say, look, well, what you do is very important. It's just not what we do anymore. Yeah. It's like working for a company that makes washer and dryers, and we decided to make cars. You did washer and dryers well.
Yeah.
We're just not going to do those anymore.
Right.
We're going to do cars, and it's just not going to be a fit. And what we tried to do is value our sister agencies.
Right.
You know, they're
inside
they're,
our denomination. There are several other agencies that do similar things.
Yeah, and much like Lifeway,
yeah.
Incredible resourcer. NAM tried to be that.
Right, North American Race Board was trying to do a publishing focus.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we just try to say, hey, look, we're going to do what we do
right.
and stay in our lane.
So you got out of publishing, and Lifeway did a lot of that. You got out of a lot of things.
Right.
And was, I mean, that had to be bumpy and controversial.
Oh, it was the worst 2 years of my life.
Right.
But again, and I mean, I remember we had breakfast before I took the job.
I think I warned you away.
You did. You said, have a clear plan B on what you're going to do once this doesn't work out,
yeah.
possibly. So, but and I really, that was incredibly helpful, but we just said, okay, we're absolutely, I had to use a gambling term, we're going to put all of our chips in on, we're going to go for this.
Yeah.
And
you had the support of, in this polity, you have a board, so you had the support mm-hmm. of the board to do that.
Right.
But, I mean, to change to the place where, I mean, how many staff did you start there?
At North American Mission Board's peak, we have 425.
And how many do you have now?
We got down to 127.
I mean, that's stunning.
Yeah.
That's stunning. And doing substantially more in church planting.
Yeah. And we're back up to about 138.
Okay. So you're really overstaffed
this
now.
Morning.
Yeah,
this night.
But also what they do is substantially different as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what we were wanting to do, I feel like that pastors are an untapped resource.
Yeah.
Pastors have a passion to do certain things. They just don't have the platform to
yeah.
do it nationally.
Yeah.
And so what we've done is we've tied into pastors and we say, hey, stay in your church, but let us use you on a national platform.
Yeah.
And that way, we don't have a full-time employee. I just really believe it's best to do it through the churches.
Yeah.
Find influencers who can influence influencers,
yeah.
and you reproduce yourself much better that way.
That's good. So one of the things I've noted about your leadership, a couple of things, is one is you just have a remarkable interpersonal ability. We call it behind your back the Ezel dust.
Right,
you sort of sprinkle some dust, and people are like, I like this guy. Maybe we'll work together.
Right.
But the other thing is I don't want to embarrass you, but you're a person of character and conviction that with a lot of these people that you had to eliminate roles, you didn't run away from it. You sat down and said, we're not making washing machines anymore.
Right.
How did you get to the place where, because, you know, there's a lot of people in Christian leadership who kind of weasel around and don't think, how did you get to the place where you could just have these straight up conversations? What part of you has brought that out?
Yeah, I was just talking to a group of pastors last night around midnight, young pastors that we had as interns. And we were talking about that very thing.
Yeah.
I said, sometimes people talk about, did I make the right decision or make the wrong decision? I said, you know, sometimes no decision is the absolute worst decision to make. But God just used certain things throughout my opportunities in pastoring where I just always felt, you know, you just go directly to it. And it's just better to confront it and move on than to rope-a-dope or act as if it's not there.
I wish that was more prevalent in all of us. And I've learned from you, watching you in the last few years in ways that I'm surprised how much just you've been able to change, but also do so with integrity and character.
In the face of so many critical social challenges, what are the loving biblical responses? Here's David Platt, author of Counterculture.
We're living in momentous days, a rapidly shifting moral landscape all around us, prevalent, pressing social issues on all sides, ranging from massive poverty in the world to orphans and widows to abortion to issues of religious liberty and racism and same-sex marriage and sexual morality. We as the church need to know how the gospel speaks to each one of these issues. That's the whole purpose of this book and this Bible study, is to equip and encourage the church to think through how does the gospel apply to all of these pressing social issues in our day, and how does God's word change the way we live in the middle of each of these issues in the culture around us.
Learn more at lifeway.com/counterculture.
Welcome back to the show. Our guest today on The Exchange is Dr. Kevin Ezel, the president of the North American Mission Board. We're going to jump back into that discussion in a minute, but up next, John Piper teaches us about the gospel and the glory of God.
If God does everything for his glory, why is he not an egomaniac? I mean, I have read, I think I have in my file at least 5 testimonies from very public figures of why they've turned away from God because God is so into God. God magnifies God. God exalts God. God glorifies God. It's all over the Bible. And so what that little interchange about joy did for me was make me realize he's not an egomaniac, because when God lifts up God, when God magnifies the beauty of God, the power of God, the sovereignty of God, the wisdom of God, the love of God, the justice of God, the truth of God, all the things about himself, when he lifts himself up, he's doing it for me to see and enjoy. Which means that God's seeking to be glorified is virtually the same as him seeking to satisfy me. And I've turned it around and said, it's true, biblical, that God is most glorified in me when I am most satisfied in him. So he's not an egomaniac. He's loving me when he lifts himself up for me to enjoy, because I was made for the glory of God. My heart here has a glory of God-shaped vacuum in it. And unless God gives me God, unless God shows me God, then I'm going to be unhappy all my eternity. Which brings us maybe finally to the gospel. What? 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 4 through 6. The God of this age has blinded the minds of unbelievers to keep them from seeing. Now listen to this phrase. The light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. The gospel is the gospel of the glory of Christ. And I think that has two meanings. One is that he was displaying his glory on the cross, and he was being glorious on the cross. He did the most glorious thing on the cross, thus purchasing my new birth and capacity to see the glory that he was displaying on the cross. He was paying the price for me to enjoy his glory, and he was being the most glorious person imaginable when he did that great act of love. So the glory of God comes to its highest climax in the glory of his grace, displayed most fully in Jesus Christ, displayed most fully when he died in the place of sinners and rose again. So the glory of God is right at the heart of the gospel, according to 2 Corinthians 4, 4 and 4, 6. And maybe one last thing, that the nitty-gritty practical is this. John Piper is a sinner. And every day I'm tempted to have attitudes, thoughts, say things, do things that are defective, hurtful, proud, selfish. What is the gospel way to slay that dragon? And my answer has become over the years, sin is never performed out of duty. You only do sin because sin is lying to you and saying, you'll be happier, it'll feel good, you'll have the strokes of getting the last word, it will go well for you if you just do this sin. You have to slay that promise of pleasure with the promise of a superior pleasure. And in the end, the highest pleasure is knowing, loving, and delighting in the glory of God manifest in Jesus Christ, which means it has become a liberator from sin. Fighting to see and savor the glory of God is not only a great honor to him, it's a great liberation for one who battles sin every day.
So, Kevin, you're leading the mission agency of large Protestant denomination in the United States to engage in church planting right. in ways that not done before, right? We've talked about just this accelerated pace, this higher focus,
right.
But you're also focusing on cities.
Right.
Why do cities matter to church planting?
Well, first of all, we believe 80 to 85% of the population live in and around cities, and most things flow from the cities. In the past, my particular denomination has ran from the cities. They're more expensive. Okay. It's more difficult. And we just feel like we have to go to where the population centers are and make significant difference. And the difference, and the tension that we have, is you have a sense of pressure from people to produce numbers, a quantity.
Yeah.
But I have a pressure to do quality.
Right.
And you want to do both.
Yeah.
And it's not that it's not easy to do in cities, as you know. If so, it ought to be done.
Yeah, that's right.
So we're going into these major cities, and we're purchasing 3 to 4 homes in each one of the cities to put planters in when they move to the cities to try to help. We felt one of the challenging things that they go through is, and the reason people steer away from cities is just housing.
Yeah, sure.
And getting acclimated. And so we're trying to do everything we can to make sure the planter's wife is comfortable.
Right.
And we found that that is one of the keys to church planning is the spouse.
Sure. So fascinating. So you're buying houses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is an aggressive strategy. You're buying houses. You're moving in people. You're moving in families, church planning families.
Absolutely.
And they're buying houses so that they can be. And it's not long-term housing, if I understand.
They stay there 2 years.
2 years.
It gives them time to save up money. They rent-free.
Yeah.
And they save up money for a down payment. Yeah. Or they find exactly where they're going to plant their church. Yeah. And typically, those homes are located near successful planters.
Okay.
So the plant they're being mentored, ideally, by take a guy like Vance Pittman in Las Vegas. Yeah. He's mentoring two planters there in Vegas, and then they may go to Salt Lake City or another part of Vegas.
Yeah, totally amazing. So it's so different than what we've heard before.
Mm.
Another part of the reality is that our denomination, like the Wesleyans and the Assemblies of God and so many others, are historically rural.
Right.
And so how do you change the mindset that people actually charge? Because, I mean, cities have become cool in our culture right now.
Right.
But in most evangelical traditions, I mean, the cities are where sin is.
Right.
And so how do you get people to want to charge the cities for the gospel?
Yeah, it is very difficult. The thing is, we're still planting churches all over North America in rural areas.
Okay, sure.
But our emphasis, we're putting a $20 to $25 million just in cities. And honestly, the biggest challenge we have right now is recruitment of planters.
Right.
We can help. We can really strong. We have churches that come alongside these planters, and we can help resource them. We just got to find what I call 5-star church planters. And in the past, you know, we were like third on the guy's options of when he considered what God may have him do.
Sure.
To be a missionary, be a pastor. If nothing else worked out, no one called, well, I guess I could always plant a church. And so what we've done is we've increased our assessments, and it sounds crazy. We need many, many more planters, but we've increased our assessments so we say no more.
Yeah.
And we had to say no more. Our assessments have gotten harder on purpose, and we need more church planters. And it's hard for people to understand that.
Yeah.
But I'd rather spend more money on fewer quality plants than... you know, just spread the money out like fertilizer and hope for the best.
Okay. So when you are engaging in church planting, you've got to get pushback from people who say, well, why don't we help the established churches?
Yeah.
Now, I know you do some, but that's not the major focus of what you do.
No, absolutely not.
And so, and we do as well. And so I'm for that. I've written books on it. So I'm not, I don't want anyone to go away from this interview thinking Ed and Kevin are against church revitalization.
No.
But what do you say to somebody who says, well, let's just put our resources into helping established stuck plateaued churches?
Yeah. Well, we try to get people to see is, look, North America is a mission field. You don't look at the international mission field and say, my word, you know, we shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
We should be spending that money, you know, in Tupelo.
Yeah.
This is a mission field. Salt Lake City is as lost percentage-wise as China. And we have got to see. And the world has come here.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people have a passion to reach a particular unreached people group. They may be living, you know, even here in Nashville.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got incredible people groups right here.
The largest Kurdish population in the world outside of Kurdistan, historic Kurdistan, is right here in Nashville.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so you can buy a pretty expensive ticket and go and try to engage. I'm saying do both.
Yeah.
But to see that North America is a mission field and to treat it that way. And really, the city is the melting pot.
Yeah.
And I really believe that we've seen a turn, a positive turn, where now they're saying, okay, we get that. We're going to do both but our emphasis, and we make no apologies for it, is the cities.
Well, and that's been a consistent kind of attribute of your leadership, is to pick something and run after it. Still other things to do, but you're picking something and running after it. So what when you look for a church planter, when you look for a team, men and women to move into a city to go plant churches, what are you looking for? What's different about people going into cities to plant churches, or are there differences?
Yeah, it's unique. The assessments are not 100% proof. I mean, you know that. But someone who's very entrepreneurial, determined, and... you know, there's a whole package, and we found that we have them go through a marriage assessment, a theological assessment, and then come up with a development plan to get them to where they want to be. That's why we came up with a farm system, what I call it. It's a baseball analogy. Of,
you know, I'm real big on sports.
Yeah, I know. So, I thought. Yeah, it's the only thing I could talk about that you wouldn't know. But we have interns where they're mentored by a church planter or a pastor, and then they become an apprentice where they actually move to the city they're going to plant and be mentored by someone, and then they become a planter. They don't all have to do that.
Right.
But we do have a development plan to say, look, this guy, you really have some of the gifts. You're just not there yet. And, you know, the average age of our church planter is about 34, 35 years old.
Right.
Most people think it's 24, 25, yeah. Spiked hair and skinny jeans. It's just not the case.
Not that there's anything wrong
Although,
with that, but it's
no,
not.
I mean,
yeah. A whole lot of them look like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'm not against hair gel, but at the same time, most of our planters yeah. have had ministerial experience
right.
in a church, right. which I think is much more healthy.
Sure.
And we just have to now. And it takes, you know, it takes more than just a year or two. We're just so, I've been there almost 5 years. It just takes more time to get a real picture if it's working or not.
Right, right. Do you think we're getting a greater focus on church planting across evangelicalism in the U.S.?
I really do.
I think so, too.
I think so. And what I pray that it's not the hula hoop.
Yeah.
You know, I just...
It has gone in waves. It has gone. If you look historically, you know, the 90s were big, mm-hmm. and then it kind of waned in the 2000s.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping as well.
Yeah, I'm just hoping, perhaps bus ministry will be the
bus ministry.
It'll come back.
It's coming back. Don't judge that.
It's like
my sister rode a bus in New York City and came to Christ. Do not mock bus.
Hey, I don't mock it. I was a bus captain.
Were you?
Well, I was 15. Listen, I was 15. They couldn't find one to take Bus Mark. They named him after the gospel.
Right.
You know? And they would take me, drop me off with a bag of Double Bubble, and I would go around visiting people. That's really... what started me in ministry was...
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Christianity Today wrote an article a few years ago saying that church planting has replaced crusade evangelism as the focal area. So we see, you know, so we joke about bus ministry, but there's crusades and then church planting. What, as you look at it, what would you say, just maybe one or two things you'd like to see as we talk about church planting that
right.
we would do this better and be more focused on within church planting?
Within church planting? Yeah. We have to be more focused on bivocational.
Yeah.
We have to be... focused
by vocational means having two jobs, like having a full-time job at the post office and planning a church on your free time.
Exactly. And what I need is a guy who would be a pharmacist mm-hmm. in Philadelphia and plant a church.
Yeah.
A guy would be a lawyer in Baltimore and plant a church. Yeah. And we have those.
Yeah.
We have a school teacher right now in New York, makes over $90,000 a year as a school teacher and plants a church. We don't pay our church planters like that and can't. And
yeah.
so... that is how I believe we can reach North America. I just talked to a group of engineers from Auburn the other day. I say student engineers. I said, look, I'm not here to try to talk you out of engineering. I'm here of talking you to be the very best engineers you could possibly be. But go to San Diego.
Yeah.
Go to L.A. And go to Seattle and be an engineer but plant a church or be a part of a church plant.
For resources mentioned in today's show, be sure to visit edstetzer.com where you can always find past episodes. We're so glad you joined us and we hope that you have a fantastic week.
Thanks for joining Ed Stetzer and his team for this week's radio edition of The Exchange. Hear this and other past broadcasts of The Exchange. Read up on the latest trends from Lifeway Research and insights and articles from Ed and his team by visiting edstetzer.com. The Exchange Radio has been presented by Lifeway Christian Resources in cooperation with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.